13. Assisted regime change. Teresa Whalen joined the Defense Intelligence Agency out of college in 1987. She served as a junior analyst of Africa as the Cold War ended. During the George H.W. Bush administration, Whalen came to the attention of what was known to insiders as OSD policy, a mixed civilian and uniformed staff that reported to the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, and through that office holder, to the Secretary of Defense. Whalen moved to OSD Policy's Africa desk and served there through the tumult of the early 1990s, the withdrawal of American troops from Somalia, and the genocide in Rwanda. Later, she worked on Balkans issues during the Kosovo conflict. When she returned as office director of the Pentagon's Africa Policy Unit in 2001, she was a seasoned manager of the Defense Department's overseas programs to train foreign militaries, to support international peacekeepers, to cooperatively patrol ocean waters, and to covertly attack terrorists. A year after the September 11 attacks, George W. Bush promoted her again, naming her as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, or DASD in Washington's vernacular, in charge of the Pentagon's Africa policy. On November 19, 2003, a warm and rainy day in the Capitol, Whalen rode after work across the Potomac to a hotel conference room to deliver a speech. The occasion was the annual meeting of the International Peace Operations Association, a trade association of private security companies that had determined that peace operations was a better branding strategy than corporate mercenaries. Many of the executives in the audience had an interest in whether Pentagon policy might encourage more contracts for private security firms, particularly in regions like Africa, given that America's uniformed military was increasingly overtaxed in Afghanistan and Iraq. Whalen spoke about the limitations of relying on contractors for military missions, but also about some of the advantages that private security firms offered in training armies in poor countries, advantages such as the fact that corporate trainers could stay in the targeted nation for years at a time, building local expertise and long-lasting relationships. She answered some questions after her formal remarks, received a round of applause, and then, as often happens at those kinds of things, she recalled, about 50 people gathered around her, shoving business cards in my face, chit-chatting. One man with a distinctly British accent caught her attention. He introduced himself as Greg Wales. He said he was an independent security consultant who worked with oil companies in West Africa, around the Gulf of Guinea. They talked about the region. Wales seemed knowledgeable. "I'm going to be in town," Wales said. "Would you be interested in sitting down and talking more?"
"Sure," Whalen said. "Fine."
She met regularly with security firms that worked with American oil companies in Africa or their consultants. It helped her keep up with details about politics and violence in countries where American intelligence and diplomatic reporting could be very limited. Not too long afterward, Wales made an appointment to visit Whalen in her Pentagon office. She did not research his background. If she had, it might not have helped much. Wales was an elusive figure. He was an accountant by profession, who had collaborated during the 1990s with private security and mercenary corporations active in diamond-rich regions of Africa. During the autumn of 2003, Wales was involved, as it happened, in a conspiracy organized by British and South African military veterans to overthrow the government of Equatorial Guinea. ExxonMobil Corporation was the largest oil company invested there. The conspirators intended to replace the current president, Teodoro Obiang Nguema, with whose government ExxonMobil had signed its contracts, with an exiled opposition leader, Severo Moto, who lived in Spain, the former colonial power in the country. Moto had gone so far as to sign his own contract with the mercenaries, guaranteeing cash payments and future security contracts to be paid for by the country's oil wealth, if the coup plan succeeded. Greg Wales had spent much of 2003 planning for the operation. He had written a number of strategy documents. One of them, entitled Assisted Regime Change, had emphasized that it would be important to persuade all of the American oil companies active in Equatorial Guinea that their investments and profits would be protected after a change of government. Foreign investors are to be reassured, Wales wrote. Wales was in charge of the coup's political strategy, particularly in the United States. He traveled to Washington and telephoned the D.C. offices of major oil companies doing business in Equatorial Guinea, as well as other companies that might be interested in moving in. He was vague, but he suggested that political changes might soon be in the offing in Equatorial Guinea. He arrived alone for his meeting at the Pentagon. Whalen invited a Defense Department aide to sit in. As Whalen recalled it, the discussion touched generally on the rising importance of oil production in West Africa and the security challenges that seemed to come alongside. They talked about Angola, a major oil producer recovering from a long civil war, as well as the insurgency and crime-racked oil-producing regions of the Niger Delta in Nigeria. Just the whole enchilada, Whalen recalled. They also addressed Equatorial Guinea. He made a comment that he thought that Equatorial Guinea was probably not the most stable place in the world, she remembered. Wales described himself as being in the security and air transport business in Africa. He said that his colleagues were reporting to him that there were a lot of well-heeled Equato-Guineans that were sort of prepaying or pre-scheduling flights out of the country in the event of some sort of problem. So that was his one piece of intelligence, if you want to call it that, that the leadership in Equatorial Guinea was nervous, and it appeared that family members were making their plans for a getaway just in case.